This call is being recorded.
Welcome to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. My name is Sean Coleman, and it is Wednesday, December 16th. We are officially 1 week away from the start of the season, and I am very thrilled to welcome a very familiar voice, one that I have been happy to talk with many times over the past few years. He is site manager over at Grizzly Bear Blues, a joy that I've had the glad to be a part of his staff over there for 2.5 years now. Site manager of Grizzly Bear Blues, the host, co-host now actually, of Grizzly Bear Blues Lives. He is the great Joe Mullinax. Joe, how are you this evening, sir?
The great Joe Mullinax. You know what? I could get used to that. And I'm just glad, Sean, that unlike the very intelligent and very handsome, but also very cowardly Mark King, the former host of this podcast, you are willing to bring me on the program. So I kudos to you, sir, for having the bravery and the wherewithal to stomach a Joe Mullinax appearance on Locked On Grizzlies, because Mark King was not.
Well, hey, you know what? We're going to take the opportunity to build on what's been a fun December for you. Now, I mean, we're starting an NBA season in December, but something that's a bit more familiar territory for, or a bit of unfamiliar territory for you, it's having the Grizzlies as a potential playoff team come, you know, at the start of an NBA season, but your Washington football team is
a legitimate
playoff contender this year in football.
I just love watching them not be an embarrassment anymore. And it's not even necessarily the wins and losses, because there were a couple of seasons there with Jay Gruden that they were in that mix. They didn't make it more often than not, but they were competitive. It's just the fact that Ron Rivera, I mean, you know this, Sean, and maybe some of your listeners that, you know, followed me for a while. In my day job, I'm a football coach. Like, I'm a teacher and I'm a high school football coach. And I believe in football more than any other sport. Being a person of character matters. And I think that the last two seasons, last year with Jay Gruden, who from all reports was not very character savvy, and now with Ron Rivera, a man who, by the way, is going through cancer treatments, or was going through cancer treatments as he was going, you know, starting his new job, trying to turn around this decrepit culture of the Washington football team. You have Alex Smith, who literally almost died, who played his tail off and worked his tail off to be an NFL starting quarterback again. I mean, and you have both of those stories on the same team. It's fun to be proud to root for them again. And they might lose the rest of their games and all that. I would still be able to say I am a Washington football team fan and not feel embarrassed. And as sad of a bar as that might be to clear, that's where we are in Washington with our football team. So you want to progress from there. The defense is phenomenal. I love watching that defensive line play. A former player of mine who I coached for a year, Tim Settle, is actually on that defensive line. So it's fun to watch him every Sunday after the one season I had to coach him. It's good to be honest with you, Sean. This has been a hard year for me. We haven't had football here in Virginia. We haven't had our season yet. It's looking, you know, iffy if we're going to have a season. Watching them play these last few weeks, especially when Alex Smith came back, it was the first time I've actually enjoyed watching football this year. And that's the best compliment I can pay them.
Well, and congratulations to them. You know, it's as a Titans fan, it's always fun to see your football team. You know, and you've been a Nationals fan. It's nice to see like multiple teams that you cheer for, you know, really get going. And now we are seeing that, you know, with the Grizzlies in terms of having playoff aspirations. And, you know, let's get into that. You can find the show at Locked On Grizz, myself at Stats SAC. You can follow the podcast wherever podcasts are available, Spotify, Stitcher, the podcast app on your phone. But Joe, let's get right into it. And before we get into the season preview, which is obviously the reason we are so thankful you had time to join us, some news, certainly some big news. And I think that it's, yeah, you want to call it a coincidence, but I think it's significant. Yesterday, we hear the news of Giannis Antetokounmpo signing the 5-year, $228 million extension with Milwaukee. And whatever theories you have about that, the thing that's true is this, is that Giannis committing to Milwaukee is a big step for those of us who cheer for teams in small markets. And now the Grizzlies today extending or picking up the options, I believe, of all four of John Morant, Jaren Jackson, Grayson Allen, and Brandon Clark for next year. Just, you know, an absolute, you know, it's unbelievable just to see how much young talent the Grizzlies have. But what does the Giannis Antetokounmpo extension mean for Memphis in terms of this future core, you feel, when it comes to their ability to, you know, continue to develop and retain this core to really reach the goals that this team has?
Well, I wrote about this over at grizzlybearblues.com a couple of weeks ago, saying that Memphis should certainly be in the market of cheering for the Milwaukee Bucks when it came to these negotiations. The Grizzlies should have wanted exactly what has transpired to occur. And the reason for that, and I wrote this in the piece, is the Memphis Grizzlies hope to someday, maybe in a more efficiently run manner, you could argue the Bucks have not surrounded Giannis with the talent that they should have until recently. It's hard to argue that anymore. But anyway, I digress. The Memphis Grizzlies want to be where the Milwaukee Bucks are in the next 5 to 7 years. They want to have an MVP caliber player. Ja Morant may not be Giannis in terms of being a back-to-back MVP. I mean, Giannis is a generational talent. Like, it's LeBron James, Kevin Durant, and Giannis, right? I think that's fair to say. Or you could take KD out of it because of the injury. It's LeBron and it's Giannis. So will Ja ever get to that level? I think it's possible, but Ja is going to be that for the Grizzlies, regardless of whether he is as good as Giannis, if that makes sense. And you could argue to a lesser extent, depending on the way Jaren comes along, he could be in a similar conversation. And you want to see an organization, in this case of the Grizzlies in particular, because the Bucks again weren't this consistently. You want to see a small market that is run the right way, that has success. And that's where it's most relevant for the Bucks, because the Bucks were the best team in the NBA last year in terms of regular season record. It was a legitimate upset when the Heat eliminated them in that second round series. And that's what brought about all the changes that Milwaukee went through this past offseason. You want to see success be rewarded in a small market. You have examples of LeBron James leaving Cleveland for Miami, Kevin Durant leaving Oklahoma City for Golden State. Those are just two in the last decade or so. There's others throughout history of the NBA of these large markets being places that these players want to go to, and especially in the era of player empowerment. I mean, look at James Harden, all the stories that have come out about James Harden in Houston the last couple of days, how he essentially runs that organization and it appears that he's run them into the ground. You know, in this era where players have more power than ever before, of course a multimillionaire in his mid-20s would rather live in Miami or Los Angeles or New York than Milwaukee. Or if we're being honest with each other, they'd much rather live in those cities than Memphis because they see the bright lights. They see the coastal living in the case of Los Angeles or New York. They see the beaches. They see all these things that cities like Milwaukee and Memphis simply can't compete with. And you have the Supermax as a tool that is supposed to be something that players look at and say, oh, this makes you want to stay here because I can make more money. But players can also say, if you're of Giannis's ilk, that you can make that money back in endorsements. You can make it, you know, saving money in state taxes, depending on the state you go to, like Florida or Texas. You know, there's so many different ways that you can make that money back that that extra year they aren't as concerned about it. So it's so refreshing. And it's important to point out that Giannis is different, right? He's an international star. He wasn't brought up in the American, you know, way of doing things. So he may not value that stuff that I just outlined as much as a LeBron or a KD or others might. But I do think it's important to point out that John Morant's different too. You know, John Morant has really leaned into Memphis. John Morant is somebody who comes from a humble background in South Carolina, who wasn't recruited highly. Obviously, LeBron James came from a humble background, but he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated at the age of, what, 16 or 17 years old? Ja Morant was playing in the second gym of AAU tournaments around the same age. So I do think that Ja has a different mentality, and it'll be interesting to watch it all kind of play out as the years go on. But the most important thing for Milwaukee was being rewarded for being successful. And obviously Giannis was a huge piece of that. But he wants to be somewhere and build something in his image. He wants to be that icon, that legend in that city, as opposed to going to be another guy with LeBron and Anthony Davis or Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo. You know, he wants to be the guy that they build around. And I do think that I could see Ja Morant having that same mindset. So it was a win for small markets. It was a win for the little guy in the face of all the Lakers fans that like to Photoshop pictures of Giannis in, you know, 34 Laker jerseys. It was just a big day for folks that cheer for teams that are not on that perennial list of NBA coverage, because it was a chance for those markets to say, if we do things the right way, our teams and our fan base will be rewarded.
And I think another thing that goes into that, you know, obviously the mentality, the mindset, the priorities of the star player that you're looking at. In Milwaukee's case, it's Giannis. In Memphis's case, it is Ja. You know, it also comes down to the front office. You know, with that star's mentality, the front office making sound, consistent decisions that consistently show that star, hey, we're going to put you in a position to reach the goals that you want to reach. I want to take you back 2 years, Joe. On December 17, 2018, over at Grizzly Bear Blues, friend of the show, guy we know really well, Parker Fleming, wrote a wonderful piece about Brooksgate. We were still in the shadow of Brooksgate, which was one of the biggest debacles in recent history when it comes to trades. We thought at first that this may be something that could work out to get Kelly Oubre, but it really was, in my opinion, kind of just a final clear picture that our old regime wasn't in. The new regime is. But go back 2 years to how you feel, and then fast forward 2 years to tomorrow night, where you're going to see the two point guards that arguably many fans feel could be in the race for the best traditional point guard of the future in the NBA, and one of the teams involved in that discussion is Memphis with Ja Morant. And you get to see that back and forth three times over the next 10 days. Just how well this front office has done and why that is such an important development with, you know, not just retaining Ja, but with really continuing to build Memphis into the sustainable winner they want to be.
It's competent management, right? It's competent management. It goes back to what we were talking about with the Washington football team. It's just so much more enjoyable to follow when you can follow the logic of the organization that you're covering. In the case of the Grizzlies for us, or in the case of the Washington football team for me as a fan, you know, it's so much better when you can see that there is a culture, there's a type, there's a standard, whatever phrase you want to attach to it, they're trying to build something. You're not throwing spaghetti at the wall and seeing what sticks. You have an opportunity to build around a potentially generational talent. And I do think it's fair to point out that that was pretty much luck, right? Like, having Ja Morant in Memphis is extremely lucky. Maybe you call that the canceling out of Hashim Thabeet. Maybe he'll defeat that ghost at the number two overall pick. But that was lucky. The other parts of it, right, the fact that they have De'Anthony Melton on the deal that they have him on, somebody that John Hollinger, a respected writer, former executive for the Grizzlies, had at valued at about $15 million a year. They signed him to a contract where he's making a little over $9 million this year, and that's the most he's going to make in a single year over the course of the contract, okay? I think that you have to look at the entire body of work, the way that they structure the deals, Tyus Jones and Jonas Valanciunas, and the way that they're utilizing Kyle Anderson now, and now that he's healthy, selecting Brandon Clark, getting the assets to make it possible to move up to trade for Brandon Clark or Desmond Bane or Xavier Tillman, to be able to do what they've done to gain multiple first round draft picks in the future to build their team as they have to start thinking about paying Ja and paying Jaren. Or you have a bunch of tradable contracts along with those two picks, extra picks, that you can go out and pull a Toronto Raptors and bring in Kawhi Leonard-esque, again, obviously not Kawhi, but a similar type of move when you think your team is ready to strike and compete for a championship, which isn't right now. And that's the best part. In the GBB comments, I get crushed sometimes, Sean. I know you see it, by people saying, how come you're okay with them not going to get Buddy Hield? Does Buddy Hield make them a championship contender right now? No. If you believe in your heart of hearts that the two best players on your team are two guys that you can eventually win a championship with, if you think they're your stars, you just need to wait for them to come of age, they both just recently, in the last 6 months, have gotten old enough to be able to drink legally in this country. They're both 21 years old. They're not competing for a championship right now, and that's okay. I don't mean that in a bad way. You have set yourself up as an organization, in the last 2 years especially, to be in a place where you can take advantage of the market, whatever comes. You can have cap flexibility if you want it. You can acquire more draft capital if you want it. You can put guys around Jaren Jackson Jr. and Ja Morant that fit their skill sets, and that's exactly what they've done. And that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to compete for a championship this year or next year. But what it does mean is they are primed to take off at a time in the NBA where LeBron James is eventually going to age out. Steph Curry is going to be in his mid to late 30s. Kevin Durant's going to be in his mid to late 30s. By the time this decade hits the midway point, the Memphis Grizzlies should be in a position to be a championship contender. And that's taking the long view. You need to have some delayed gratification. But again, it's just so nice to see that there's a vision. It's not just trying to hold on to something that's no longer there beyond the point of expiration like Chris Wallace did with Grit and Grind. It's a chance to build something new in another way organically through the process of time. And I respect that a lot for Zach Kleiman and that front office. It's not going to be the same as Grit and Grind, but from the fact that they're allowing it to grow without the constraints of expectation, that's going to enable these kids, these young men, to build this thing. So as they come of age as players, they're going to be able to say, this is our organization. This is what we've built. And you know what, Sean? When you build the house, it's a hell of a lot harder to leave. And that's another strategy when it comes to re-signing these guys. It's hard to bring them into Memphis, but once they experience the city, and in this particular case, once they have literally built what it means to be a Grizzly over these next 5 years, it's going to be a lot harder for Ja Morant to want to go to these other places if that is an option for him.
And I agree completely. And that's the thing, you know, you want to talk about, you know, ESPN and other places release these lists of top players under 25 and, you know, the top players in the NBA and all this. You see Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. in the top 40, and then you realize these guys are both 21 years old. And they're both Memphis Grizzlies. And that is just, it's an unbelievable feeling. But what also is an unbelievable feeling is, like we mentioned, we are a week away from the start of the season. That's what me and Joe are going to get into. When we come back, going to talk with Joe. Me and Joe share similar thoughts when it comes to the storyline of the season, but perhaps a bit of a different perspective. We'll jump into that when we come back here on the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. Life can be stressful under even the most normal of circumstances, but as we know, 2020 has certainly changed our perception of what is normal. It's challenged even the most difficult of times that we previously had in life. We all need stress relief that goes beyond quick fixes, and that's Headspace. Headspace is your daily dose of mindfulness in the form of guided meditations in an easy-to-use app. It's one of the only meditation apps advancing the field of mindfulness and meditation through clinically validated research. Headspace's approach to mindfulness can reduce stress, improve sleep, boost focus, and increase your overall sense of well-being. And it's backed by 25 published studies on its benefits, 600,000 five-star reviews, and over 60 million downloads. Headspace makes it easy for you to build a life-changing meditation practice with mindfulness that works for you on your schedule, anytime, anywhere. You deserve to feel happier, and Headspace is meditation made simple. Go to headspace.com/lockedonNBA. That's headspace.com/lockedonNBA for a free 1 month trial with access to Headspace's full library of meditations for every situation. This is the best deal being offered right now. Head to headspace.com/lockedonNBA to get your first month for your 1 month free trial of Headspace today. A lot of exciting things coming to end this week and start next week again as we get closer to the start of the season. On tomorrow's episode, fantasy basketball premiere for the Memphis Grizzlies, really looking at different players on the Grizzlies who at different levels really could help your fantasy teams. As we talked about with the sports gambling obviously becoming much more widespread in the state of Tennessee due to some new laws that have been passed, daily fantasy lineups are certainly going to be a big promotion this year on a lot of different levels. We're going to look at it from that perspective. But also just in general, it may not be on the level of fantasy basketball or fantasy football or baseball, but fantasy basketball can offer a lot of fun. And there is a lot of potential intrigue when it comes to the Memphis Grizzlies from a fantasy basketball perspective. So going to be detailing that in tomorrow's episode. And then on Friday and Monday, continuing our trip around Memphis with some of the best minds covering the Grizzlies. On Friday, we're going to be able to talk with Drew Hill of the Daily Memphian in regards to his season preview, looking at some things that he's looking forward to for the Grizzlies this season, and then next Monday looking to discuss the season outlook again with Evan Barnes of the Commercial Appeal. So a lot of fun content coming up as we get started, you know, as we look forward to the start of the season for the Memphis Grizzlies. So Joe, today over at SB Nation, you wrote a wonderful piece, as we are accustomed to seeing from you, in regards to your main storyline of the season. And I also had mentioned that over here on Locked On Grizzlies. And you and I both, when it came to our storyline of the year, we focused on both players who are going to miss the start of the season. It just differed in who we focused on. And so obviously want to get your thoughts on both. Joe, when I look at Justice Winslow, just to put it simply, I want for him to reach the expectations that the Grizzlies hope he can provide with what, you know, they invested with him at the trade deadline. My thing is, though, is that for them truly to feel confident in picking up his option, he needs to prove that he's healthy, and he needs to differentiate himself from other players on the roster, being that go-to defender on the perimeter, secondary playmaker, and at least a reliable catch-and-shoot three-point, you know, source. Is it that simple? Do you expect those things to work for Justice? And do you really feel that he... Do you put the team option in question, or do you put more faith in that he will differentiate himself as the season progresses?
Well, if I had to guess today, I would say it's more likely that they let the team option expire than they bring him back on it. And there's a couple of reasons why. One, he hasn't played yet. And I think that no matter how high you are on Justice Winslow, and I'm pretty high on him, you got to be on the court. Right. The greatest ability in life a lot of times is availability. I'd say that that's something that you and I, Sean, understand pretty well. You know, I'll speak for myself, not for you. I don't think I'm the most talented person on the planet, but damn it, I'm available. You know what I mean? Like, I don't miss work very much. I'm there writing. I'm there recording. I am available. And I think that is a very important skill to have in life, that you can be counted on by people. And right now, Justice Winslow can't be counted on to be on the court healthy. And that is something that he's going to have to prove over the span of the season. And one of the promising things about that is none of these injuries are connected, right? He had back issues, then it's the hip, he had knee concerns. If you want to say, oh, well, great, his whole body is messed up, maybe there's logic to that, I guess. But it's not like we're not dealing with a Chandler Parsons situation, right? I've seen a couple of people compare it to that, and it's nowhere near that dire for a variety of reasons. I think that he's a perfect fit for the Memphis Grizzlies. For all the reasons you outlined, as a secondary facilitator, I think that he can impact the game without having to score, which is nice when you have Jaren Jackson Jr. and Ja Morant, to a lesser extent, Dylan Brooks and Jonas Valanciunas. It's good to be able to have a guy that can have a 8.7 rebounds, 6 assists, a couple of steals and a block night. And, you know, he's essentially another Kyle Anderson, who's just a better athlete who can, in theory, shoot the three. And he can play almost every position on the floor. Justin Lewis over at GVB wrote about that for us in the past couple of weeks, I believe, talking about all the different positions he played. And the only one that he really failed at that wasn't related to health in Miami was center, and the Grizzlies probably wouldn't need him to ever play center. They'd put Kyle there before they'd put Justice. So I just see him as such a wonderful fit and a cost-effective one at that, because even if they opt out And I think that that is, like I said, probable at this stage. That can change. But if they opt out, and you have to remember Gorgui Dieng's contract is expiring, you have the contract of Deion Waiters coming off the books that they waived outright. So there's $12 million or so of dead cap on the salary cap right now for Memphis. They have ways of getting, you know, $20, $30 million in cap space, and they can be players in free agency if they want to be. Or they can do what they did in the Andre Iguodala case and just have somebody pay them with a draft pick for a bad contract and, you know, continue to accumulate draft capital. And they can still bring Justice Winslow back on a contract if they want. I believe they have bird rights on his deal. I could be wrong on that. I should have double-checked that before I got on, but I'm pretty sure that's correct. So they'd be able to bring him back in to a longer contract, even if they opted out. So not opting into the team option doesn't mean that he doesn't come back. It could just mean, I mean, Zach Randolph back in the day did that, right? He would opt out of a contract. Memphis would sign him, or he would opt into a team option, excuse me, and then he would take less money. Justice may not do this because he's younger, but Zach would, you know, opt into an option and then take less money in the years that followed that in the new contract. So there's all sorts of different ways that it can go with Justice. He has to stay on the floor first and foremost, but the reason I think he's the most important piece is Jaren is going to come back. He had the meniscus surgery that is a longer recovery, but it's more likely to successfully solve the problem. And he's going to be back probably mid to late January. He's going to be there for 2/3 of the season, roughly. They're going to be in the mix with Jaren in the fold. But we've seen this team have success with Jaren and no other wing like Justice, and we've seen them struggle without a wing like Justice. So to me, if you want to have the next level, if you want to in this newly revamped Western Conference where you have the Phoenix Suns with Chris Paul and you have all these other teams that think they have a chance to compete for the play-in, like New Orleans, like Sacramento to a lesser extent, San Antonio still looms large. It's hard for me to write off Greg Popovich when he has DeMar DeRozan and LaMarcus Aldridge at the helm. So I just think when you look at the lay of the land in the West, we know that Jaren will make Memphis better when he returns. We know that. How good can the Grizzlies be with Justice Winslow? How good can Dylan Brooks be when he doesn't have to be that main facilitator besides Ja, and he can just be a spot-up shooter more consistently, or he can create off of cuts from a Justice pass more effectively? We don't know that yet, and I think that the grandest opportunity for growth in terms of improving as a team comes with a healthy Justice Winslow.
I agree. I think that there is, you know, we've seen this roster together now. It's hard to believe, but it's been over a year. It's been nearly 15 months, and we have a good idea of what this roster could be. I do agree Justice certainly is that missing piece that is there. You know that the idea of him, you know, could work, but can he do it in reality? And I think that that really will be a big storyline. For me, the big storyline was Jaren Jackson Jr. And speaking of this team taking it to a new level, you know, obviously this, you know, if you want to talk about Jaren being injury prone, I think it's way too early to discuss that. Yes, he's had a few things, but part of the reason why he's been out for the links that he has is this team just being cautious, as they should, to bring him back when he's healthy. But that's going to be the case. When he comes back, he's going to be healthy. The question I have for you, Joe, is this, is that it was only three games, but the glimpses of the type of offensive difference maker we could see Jaren be in the three games in the bubble was phenomenal. Like that type of Jaren, especially his quality, got a bit better if he was to consistently perform at that level, was so eye-opening and intriguing. But there's the other side of things where you hope he gets consistent in that area, but also in the area of limiting his fouls and maybe when it comes to defensive consistency. When it comes to him this year, is the true hope, is it very important for him to take a step in either one of those directions when it comes to his consistency? And if he doesn't, do you feel after this year a bit underwhelmed? How important is it for him in year three, though he'll just be 21, to really show a consistent version of himself that taps into that all-star level that we know he has?
Well, he's younger than Ja Morant, I believe, right? By like a month or so, something like that. They're roughly the same age, even though Jaren came out a year earlier into the NBA. Listen, I agree that we need to see growth, and I think that that's important. And something that I left out in my Justice Winslow explanation is we also expect, and we've seen it in the first two preseason games, albeit against a Timberwolves team that's one of the few in the NBA that's probably definitely going to be bad. John Morant having a massive sophomore season is very much in play. He dominated the Timberwolves. He was the best player on the floor, and D'Angelo Russell and Karl Anthony Towns also were on the floor. Those are two guys that maybe entering last season you would have thought were better than John Morant. So I do believe that Ja is important in all of this too, of course. But with regards to Jaren, I am not going to say anything in terms of him being a bust or anything. I'm not saying you're saying that either. But there's going to be people that if, like the rebounding thing, for example, if Jaren does not show growth as a seven-footer being able to rebound defensively, there are going to be people that are going to start asking to trade Jaren Jackson Jr. Like, and I'm not saying those people aren't crazy because they are crazy. But that's one of the things that you want to see some improvement in. But at the same time, we also have to be accepting of who he is, right? We have to start understanding, and I think the Grizzlies do understand this because you look at the rebounding rates of De'Anthony Melton, of John Conchar, these guys that they're bringing in. You even notice Ja Morant attacking the glass a little bit more right now than maybe he has in the past. I think that they are embracing the rebounding being a team stat mentality in preparation for Jaren returning, because that's just not a strength of his game. At what point do you accentuate the strengths instead of just trying to always focus on the weaknesses, right? What is Jaren Jackson Jr. good at? We know that he has the physical potential to be an elite defender. He can switch on the perimeter. Taylor Jenkins has compared him defensively in that way. I want to make sure I'm specific here. Defensively in that way, in terms of potential, to Giannis, who we were talking about in the first segment. Jaren has that potential. He's certainly not there yet. He fouls too much. All that's fair. But he has those physical gifts, those physical tools. Offensively, he's a 6'11 wing. He can create off the dribble. He took countless guys off the dribble in the bubble. He was remarkable in that way. He is an excellent volume three-point shooter. He is, right now, at the age of 21, an excellent volume three-point shooter. So I want to try to prioritize, when I look at Jaren, A, keeping him on the floor, because I agree that he's not injury-prone yet. Memphis is being cautious with him, as they should be. I want them to continue to build around what makes Ja and Jaren great, and also helping them in the areas where they lack. And I think that Jaren, you see it a lot more clearly because of that glaring rebound issue. But again, you have Kyle Anderson. You have Jonas Valanciunas. We mentioned Conchar and Melton. They have all these different players that can replicate what a traditional four in the aggregate would do as a rebounder. And it allows for Jaren to be what he wants to be and what he clearly is best at this stage of the NBA, of his NBA career. So I am interested in seeing him grow as a creator off the dribble, as a facilitator of the basketball, because they always talk about being unselfish. I know you're on these calls with me, Sean. By the way, you're doing a great job doing that. Lots of good questions asked to the coaches and players. But you want to see him continue to be unselfish, swing the ball, not force things offensively. You want to see him be a smarter defender, not take ticky-tack fouls like Dylan Brooks would call them. But for me, the way that I'll judge Jaren Jackson Jr. is, are they continuing to put him in positions to be successful, and are they surrounding him in rotations with players that are going to help mask what he's not as sound in? Because especially with a player of his type, you don't want to try to make him something that he's not. He's not LeBron James. He's not Giannis in terms of just being an all-encompassing monster. What he is a player at a very young age who can shoot the ball extremely well, who can defend the rim well, who can create off the dribble with a large, long frame. And you want to accentuate those points so that as he gets older and he expands his tool set as a player, he's best prepared to do that. And he's not being dragged down by expectations of something that aren't realistic for him, given his age and the fact that he is still growing into his game.
I think you hit the nail on the head. The thing about it is that, you know, you want to see him consistent in all these areas, but you want, and this is what I respect so much about Taylor Jenkins, and we'll get to why I feel this way also in terms of his, you know, perspective with Ja. You want to focus on the things that he's good at. We can talk about being disappointed about the rebounding, the defensive consistency, the fouls, that's fine. But the one thing that we know is that the part of his game that clearly is above where we thought it would be, to the point of being historic for a guy his size and age, is being a volume shooter and shooting. And that is exactly what is the strength of Taylor Jenkins' system. So I agree with you completely. Focus on what he's good at, and you've got something there in him where it's very unique with all-star, all-NBA type potential, and the rest of the game will develop as it needs to with him being so young. But Joe, on those calls, and thank you for your kind words. The other thing that we also saw to Taylor Jenkins is that he also is focusing on the strengths of Jaw. Obviously, he knows that Ja becoming a better shooter is something that's really going to be a big step in his development and for the development of the team. But he also wants to continue making Ja more consistent in being effective with his strengths, and that's getting into the lane off of plays based off whatever defensive looks the defense is throwing at him. He wants Ja to get better at getting into the lane and being effective between a pass and getting a shot that's high percentage. And we saw indications of that, though, consider the competition. But is that the logical next step for Ja to be more consistent besides the shooting? Is there anything else besides his decision-making and his shooting that you really feel will add significant value to him to take that big sophomore leap like you mentioned just a moment ago?
What makes the greatest point guards in the NBA the greatest point guards in the NBA? What makes Steph Curry, Steph Curry? Chris Paul, Chris Paul? Kyrie Irving, as crazy as he is, what makes Kyrie Irving great? Is the fact that when they have the ball in their hands, more often than not, regardless of the competition, you feel like they have the game in the palm of their hands too. It's not just the ball. It's the ball is a personification or a physical realization of the game itself. They are controlling pace. They're controlling tempo, whether they're out in transition or they're in a half court set. They have complete and total control over what A, their offense is doing, or defense, vice versa, depending on what side of the floor they're on, and B, what their opponent wants to do and what their opponent is going to be able to do because of what the coaching staff has put in schematically. And I think for me, that is the biggest jump that I want to see from Ja Morant. We know he can get to the basket at will. That's not a question at this point. We know that he can throw laser-like passes across the gym. That's not a question at this point. I made a joking tweet on Twitter because I don't bet. But if you haven't placed a small wager, I don't know what the odds are on Ja Morant being one of the top five assist creators in the NBA this year. You might want to consider it because he is phenomenal in the two-man game, especially with Jonas Valanciunas. I asked Jonas about that the other night. They are going to rack up a lot of assists this year, just those two guys alone in their interactions. So I think for me, I want to see Ja, and you see flashes of it already in the preseason. He's attacking the glass as a rebounder. He's helping where he can as a rim protector. He did some verticality Roy Hibbert style, Sean, on a couple of plays against the Minnesota Timberwolves. He's looking for ways to use his body to create space and then to close it. If a defender is close to him at this point, or at least in those two preseason games, and again, small sample size against a bad team, more than likely, you could tell if you got close to him, he wanted you there. Did you get that vibe, Sean? Like when I was watching him, if he was letting you in, it's because he wanted you to be there. It's not because you cut him off or you hedged the screen properly or you were executing your defensive scheme. You were right where Ja wanted you to be because he was setting up something a step or two ahead that you hadn't thought about yet. And that's what I want to see from Ja Morant. I know he can do highlight dunks. I know that he's going to be on SportsCenter. I know that he's going to run in transition and people are going to hold their breath when the lobs come up for him to slam it home. That's fantastic. If we're talking about that Grizzly standard and building a championship contender, when they have a great point guard on those teams, those guys control every aspect of the game. They might not rack up the stats, but they have control. You feel like they're turning the dial on the game itself. And he doesn't need to get all the way there. Again, he's young. He's in his second season. I want to see progression towards that. And it's encouraging to already see some flashes of it in the preseason. I hope it continues.
And control is a big word, and it's different levels of control that you're seeing him improve in. You know, in terms of being effective at controlling himself, he is so fast and so active when he's on the court, but there's more control this year. When he has the ball in his hands, you know that he controls the keys to this offense, an offense that literally has already shown it can reach heights no other offense in Grizzlies history has. And we're getting to the point, Joe, and I said this when I, you know, had mentioned in a tweet and on this show, there are going to be more times than people think right now. I think there will be more times than people may know where Ja truly looks like the best player on the court. There's going to be times in games, unexpectedly, where you truly feel the outcome of the game is truly within Ja's hands. And if he simply plays to his level consistently, there's really nothing the other team can do about it. But we've talked about Ja, Justice, and Jaren. There are plenty of other players to discuss. And while we won't look at each of them individually, a couple of other pertinent questions regarding the Grizzlies roster that really could make the difference between them being playoff contenders and, you know, potential lottery locks. Coming up, I'll talk with Joe about a few more names that really need to stand out early in the season for Memphis. Does it ever feel as if when you're trying to get through your day, you just run into a wall? It could be in a variety of different ways. Maybe just getting out of bed to start a project, get to work, go to school, pursuing a life change that you know you need to do but just cannot get motivated to do it, or just simply trying to get on with your work day. For me, it's trying to go back to work after a large lunch. I'd love to just sit and maybe take a nap, but I know that I need to get back to work. Well, if you run into that wall, I may have a solution for you to help you scale it, and that's Built Go. Built Go is the easy-to-take-in 1.5-ounce package of workout gel that's the best workout gel on the market. It's like a 5-hour energy drink without the same crash feeling. It's like a monster drink with a third of the caffeine and better results. Not only does it come in three delicious flavors, peanut butter honey, chocolate coconut, and chocolate mint, it also combines energy gel with collagen protein and a lot of other great ingredients that not only help you stay energized through the day, but keep you productive. And the great thing about Built Go is if you go to BuiltGo.com right now and using the promo code LOCKED, that is the promo code LOCKED, you'll get 20% off your next order. But I can tell you this, if you were to add Built Go to your daily routine, you won't regret it, and it will be there to stay. Again, use promo code LOCKED at BuiltGo.com for 20% off your next order at BuiltGo.com. Let's go. NBA fans, listen up. The Locked On NBA podcast is getting you ready for the start of the regular season with a special week of team preview podcasts all this week, plus waiver wire additions from Locked On Fantasy Basketball and rookies to watch from draft guru Chad Ford. I'll be tuning in to do the preview of the Locked On Grizzlies episode, which will be on Wednesday's podcast. Subscribe to Locked On NBA wherever you get your podcasts and enjoy the Locked On NBA season previews. So, Joe, on Grizzly Bear Blues Live, you accurately, and it seems like it's going to come to fruition, I discussed with you about the Brandon Clark, Kyle Anderson situation at the four. You know, who should get the start? I mentioned Brandon Clark because I want to see him be able to play, you know, and get him some run, you know, in an opportunity that we hope he can fit. But Kyle Anderson brings so much potential to that, you know, opportunity to really help his teammates out. But between him and Dylan Brooks, we know their strengths. Kyle, facilitation and defense. Brooks, his ability to create his own shot. But we know they've both been working in the offseason for Kyle's health. We've seen indications that in unexpected ways, they may be able to add more value than we thought. How important is that, especially at the start of the season, for Kyle and Dylan to find multiple ways to add value consistently for this Grizzlies team to truly take advantage of a pretty manageable start to the early part of the schedule?
It's much more important for Dylan Brooks than it is for Kyle Anderson, in my opinion, because Kyle Anderson is a good basketball player. And I've said that all along. My frustration with starting Jay Crowder over him last year was driven off of that. I truly believe Kyle Anderson's a better basketball player than Jay Crowder. And they started Jay Crowder because he was willing to shoot. And Kyle Anderson, for whatever reason, maybe it was because of his shoulder not being all the way right, was not quite at that level as a shooter. But Kyle is showing more of a willingness to do that, and he's converting them at a decent clip. Combining all of those things together is why Kyle Anderson will probably be the starting four on opening night, which I like, and I know you like that too. Although I do agree with you on Brandon Clark. I just think it makes more sense. He's an elite role player. Let him continue to be that with Tyus and Melton, perhaps, and grow from there. I think it's Dylan. Because Dylan is the guy, especially we talk about Jaren being out for a month. There's one other guy on that starting lineup who can create his own shot, especially the three, off the dribble if you don't start Desmond Bane. If you start Melton or Grayson Allen, I know Grayson Allen can kind of do it, but the next best guy is Dylan Brooks. And we've seen how he can force it, right? We've seen how he can look for that rhythm in the game, not have it, and still launch the shot. Or he can misread a defense and have two or three guys around him. And instead of kicking it to the open player or swinging the ball across the court, he takes the shot. And it's ill-advised. A lot of times it's in the mid-range, which is one of the most inefficient shots you can take, especially with defenders around you. So if Dylan Brooks can continue to be that secondary creator, and he's talked about it with the media, you watch the games and you see it, you can tell he's actively trying to do it better. If he can do that consistently and find the flow and the rhythm of the game and put himself in a position to take the shots that he's supposed to be taking, because people like to hate on Dylan Brooks, but he's a good basketball player. He can shoot this three. He can create off the dribble. He can defend. And his mentality is extremely valuable. People want to give Jaren and Jock credit for building this Grizzly standard. Dylan Brooks is right in that mix with the swagger, man. He's right there. And you can tell that Ja and Jaren respect that about him, too. If Dylan can be that guy and can adjust his game to still be an offensive force as a scorer, because he's one of the few guys they have that can do that consistently, that we've seen do it consistently. But if you also allow for him to have that place to, again, organically accept that he needs to be better at this and he buys into it, that's just going to make the offense that much more impactful, because that wasn't there before. Dylan Brooks is one of the worst in the NBA last year, or he was one of the worst in the NBA last year when it came to his assist to point ratio. One of the worst. He was looking for his shot first and foremost. That selfless brand of basketball, Dylan didn't buy into it in year one. If he's buying into it in year two, that in and of itself, even without Jaren Jackson Jr., can open up another layer and another level to this offense that we haven't seen. And that's something to be excited about if Dylan can stay the course through the preseason and into that start of the season, like you mentioned.
And then, of course, so we've got four of the five lineup spots figured out, obviously, with Jonas. We haven't really focused on Jonas. We know what Jonas brings and how important it truly is. But the other position to be discussed with Justin and Jaren out is the two-guard position. And, you know, we discussed it a bit, on Grizzly Bear Blues Live, but now with a little bit of, action in place. You know, what I think it comes down to is this. Grayson Allen, through hard commitment on his end and through great work, he has turned himself. You talked about movement without the ball and finding the shot. Grayson Allen has chosen that as his niche to excel at, and he's doing it. And that obviously works for him because that's what Taylor Jenkins wants. But I think that Anthony Melton offers so much potential outside of that, significantly more than Grayson Allen does. You know, we discussed last week while it made sense to, start Grayson to begin the preseason. But Joe, I just think the starting lineup looked better with DeAnthony in it. And I think that definitely becomes a valid statement if you put faith in Melton's incremental improvements when it comes to his shot. Do you feel that Melton is the answer now as that two guard to start the season? And how much faith do you put into, seeing immediate improvements in his shot once the games start to count in a week?
I wanted to be Desmond Bane. You know that, Sean. You knew the answer to that question before you asked. I think in terms of being rational, right? Because there's plenty of rational reasons that it won't be Desmond Bane. He was the 30th pick in a draft that we have the least amount of information on these guys from a summer league perspective, from a full training camp perspective. Everything's accelerated. Everything's more difficult because of COVID. I just believe in what Desmond Bane can be as a scorer, as a creator. I've seen enough to throw him into the deep end of the pool until Justice Winslow is ready and let him work through it. In reality, the conversation about DeAnthony Melton needs to be, well, can he be an offensive threat? Because right now he's elite in transition, offensively and defensively. He's very good as a rim protector at a small position on the wing as that two guard. He is a very good rebounder for being a two guard, which is extremely valuable, like we talked about earlier. He does so many things well. He's a good secondary facilitator. He's not a point guard. We learned that in the bubble, and Phoenix learned that in his rookie season before the trade. He's not a point guard. He's a great secondary facilitator on the wing, though. I think that's fair to say. But the one question has been, can he shoot? And can you start a lineup that includes Jonas Valanciunas and Kyle Anderson and DeAnthony Melton alongside Jaw and Dylan and have the spacing required for the offense to not be a complete disaster? In the bubble, the answer was no, right? The offense struggled a lot at times for whatever reason. And DeAnthony had a really bad bubble. But in these two preseason games, his shot, his jumper, has looked a lot better. He's looked a lot more comfortable. And if he can be enough of a threat that defenses have to respect him, because again, he can be the fourth option. He can be the fifth option. He should never be the third, second, or first. But if he's good enough that if you swing to him in the corner and he's open and he'll hit that corner three 36% of the time, that's a threat that opposing teams have to respect. Same thing with Kyle. So you have to have these guys, especially you have to remember there's no perfect answers, right? With Jaren Jackson Jr. out, with Justice Winslow out, but especially Jaren, none of these are going to be perfect. Like Melton has flaws. Grayson Allen has flaws. Bain has flaws, like we alluded to. All those guys probably should be reserves, but we don't have our two starting caliber guys ready to grow with the season beginning. So you're trying to mix and match and make it as good as you can. Melton's game is malleable. There's all sorts of statistics, and I wrote about this when I talked about Bain being the starter. To me, the argument is Melton versus Bain. I don't think Grayson should be in the conversation because I see him having more success against reserve wings. If you want him to be that moving off the ball, coming off screens, three-point launcher, and maybe create a little bit off the dribble here and there, I think you get so much more out of that when he's playing alongside Tyus Jones and Brandon Clark and John Conchar, even with these injuries that they've mounted up, right? I just see that as being more valuable with those guys in terms of giving an offensive punch. And Melton, again, there's rarely, I talked about this on 3&D this week. I filled in for Justin Lewis talking to Jonathan Sharks. There are no true second units anymore, right? Rarely is there a true second unit where those guys are all out there for an extended period of time by themselves. Usually have stars intermingling, intermixing. DeAnthony Melton is one of the most malleable players on this Grizzlies roster. He fits with a lot of different guys because of the way he plays the game. I just think as a plug-and-play, here's our starter for a week or two while Winslow gets right, Melton makes the most sense. He'll accentuate and amplify what those other four guys do best, especially if he's able to consistently show growth as a shooter, both from the mid-range and the perimeter.
And Joe, the thing that I'll say to that is when it comes to that, like you said, there's no perfect answer with Justice and Jaren out, but there's also really not a bad answer either, because if you start Melton, then you've got Grayson shooting, you've got Desmond Bane's two-way ability that you know you mentioned, and you know, and his ability that you feel to be the best option to start until Justice is back. But Brandon Clark, Tyus Jones, yes, there's no true second units, but this Grizzlies depth is just, it offers so much talent in particular. Just your thoughts on that. In my opinion, that honestly may be the biggest factor in us being a true playoff contender this year, faster than many had thought. Is this the most intrigued you've been in terms of a Grizzlies depth or bench unit? And do you feel that their play could be the biggest factor in just how realistic our playoff potential could be this season?
Well, think about it like this, Sean. Assuming that Justice Winslow and Jaren Jackson Jr. are starters when they come back. Obviously, Jaren will be, but, you know, there's some people that debate Justice. Let's say Justice is too. So your starting lineup is Ja Morant, Dylan Brooks, Justice Winslow, Jaren Jackson Jr., Jonas Valanciunas, okay? That means your reserve unit is what? That is Tyus Jones, that's DeAnthony Melton, that's Kyle Anderson, Brandon Clark, Grayson Allen. I didn't even say Desmond Bane yet. I didn't even say Gorgui Dieng yet, who has had some success early on in the preseason. We know what he can be as a true backup big. You have got John Conchar, haven't brought him up yet. This is definitely one of the deeper teams they've had, and I don't know that it's deep in terms of playoff success, because you can go back to the grit and grind era, the years of Kosta Kupas and people like that, where you can maybe argue the roster was deeper with veterans. But in terms of guys that fit what they're trying to do, it's a really solid group of depth. And I really think that when you have that fully healthy bench unit, Tyus Jones, Grayson Allen, DeAnthony Melton, Brandon Clark, those four guys as your core fitting around the other five, there is just so much potential for room and growth and development and spacing and slashing and unselfish basketball. The possibilities are really endless. And I don't mean that in the sense that they're going to beat the Lakers to make it to the NBA Finals. I mean that in terms of, again, what's the goal here, Sean? Maximizing Jaren Jackson Jr. and Ja Morant. And there really is not a single player on this roster, even Gorgui Dieng, who's there more so because of his contract than anything else. No disrespect to Gorgui. He obviously earned the contract with Minnesota, but he's the highest paid player on the Grizzlies right now, hilariously. Okay? So not a single player on this team is there that isn't a fit. And that is so wonderful, especially in a season where COVID is going to pick people off in terms of being out for long amounts of time. You've heard that they're going to have 15 active roster spots this year. The two-day guys, Killian Tilly and Sean McDermott, are going to be available more in terms of two-way play. I think that the fact that so many of these players are capable of being intermixing and interchanging, some of them can start. Obviously, they may not have as much success as starters as they would as reserves, but the fact that they all can intermix and they're interchangeable, there's not a ton of bad combinations. Like, you have players like Jonas Valanciunas and Brandon Clark that maybe aren't perfect fits, but they had some success together, and they especially had that success when they had other shooters around them. So you add Grayson Allen, you add Dylan Brooks and Tyus Jones, or Justice Winslow at the point guard in that particular lineup, and maybe those guys have even more success than they would have otherwise because they have a different group of offensive talent around them. There's just so much possibility and imagination that can happen. And we've seen some of that from Taylor Jenkins, right? The four guard lineups that we've seen. Like, it looks like he's more willing to be experimental this year and try different things and look for different ways to create the spacing and the offensive movement he wants. There's just so much to really look forward to in terms of how they're going to build what this is going to look like, because that's the goal. This is still a rebuild. We have to remember that. They'll compete for the play-in. They'll be in that conversation, but don't lose sight of the light on the horizon. The end game is that sustained success and being a championship contender. This is another year of building that, and I think that we'll see more layers to that than we did in the previous year, and that has me excited as someone that follows the team, because there's going to be a lot of trial and error. There's going to be some things that work, some things that don't, but they're going to continue to find the ways to maximize Morant, Jackson Jr., and that's the way for them in the long run to be that championship contender we hope they will be in the next 2 years or so.
Then let's get right down to it, Joe. So I'll give you a five-win range, your range of five wins for the Grizzlies, where you think that they'll place, and the biggest reason as to why you think they will once again exceed where you think that they'll place. What would really need to happen for them to truly be in that seventh or eighth spot instead of potentially lower in the standings?
Well, if you, again, it's a 72-game season. So if you have them at, what, 36 and 36 would be 500, right? I think they have to be around that to be in the 7 or 8 seed conversation. They have to be a 500 team. I wrote in my SB Nation preview that we talked about earlier, to me it's disrespectful or unrealistic, maybe is the better way to put it. The Phoenix Suns are better than the Memphis Grizzlies right now. I'll be the one to say it. Maybe other people won't say it, but you upgrade a position that Phoenix needed help with, and they bring in literally one of the greatest players to ever play that position. Even though he's a veteran, he showed when he essentially helped carry Oklahoma City to playoff success when they weren't trying to be good, or at least at first they weren't trying to be good. I think Chris Paul deserves some respect on his name. That's what they needed, and they got him. They got Chris Paul. So I think Phoenix is better than Memphis right now. I just do. And I think that New Orleans has a right to say that they're going to be better. Now, I think they're going to compete. I don't think it's going to be an outright, you know, the Pelicans are five games better than Memphis. But the Pelicans, when healthy, when Zion Williamson is out there and he's at his best, and I think the Pelicans are going to be in that mix. And Houston, you know, James Harden is still there. Until Houston fully enters that rebuild mode, Houston's going to be in the playoff conversation. You have Golden State coming back, who's going to be in the playoff conversation. And only really OKC is falling out of the fold. So where does Memphis fit in? I struggle to say that they are better, for sure, than eight other teams. I struggle with that. So that puts them in the 9 or 10 seed range. I have them right now as the 10 seed, which, of course, would put them in the play-in against the 7 seed once the season concludes. That's kind of where I see them fitting. And I see them winning somewhere in the range of 29 or 30 to 34 games. I think that's realistic for them. Because, again, we have to keep in mind, they could be better as a team this year and still miss the playoffs. Like, that is certainly within the realm of possibility. The Grizzlies did not push all their chips in this offseason. They actually doubled down on the standard they're building. And I think that was the right decision. Because they're not, again, if you subscribe to the theory that you need superstars to win championships, if you believe that you have those two guys on your team right now, but they're just 21 years old, you're not going to win a championship with those guys right now. You're not. You might make it to the second round of the West and get curb stomped by LeBron James and Anthony Davis in their primes, especially AD. But is that worth it? Is that worth cashing in all your chips to try to get that level of productivity and success now? Zach Kleiman has shown that he's willing to pull the trigger on moves, but only when they benefit the long-term vision of this franchise. I don't think they're going to do anything to try to take away from that. So the fact that they got better internally but didn't bring in any external factors, the fact that you have players coming off of injury, Justice Winslow and especially Jaren Jackson Jr., I just see them as a 30-ish, give or take a couple games, win team, which will put them in the play conversation. I think they'll be in that hunt. I don't think they'll completely tumble out unless, you know, Jaren doesn't come back at all or something else terrible happens health-wise or injury-wise. But I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing. There are no expectations from me except for growth. And that growth can occur on the same plane as them not making the playoffs. That's both of those things can happen. They're not mutually exclusive. And I think that's an important perspective for people to keep as they go through the season upcoming.
Yeah, we're right on the same wavelength. I had said 30 to 35 wins. I had said 9th to 10th spot. I feel if they were to, you know, potentially emerge as having a chance to be an above 500 team and be somewhere in that mix of, you know, getting into that 7th or 8th spot, I mean, in my opinion, three things need to happen. Ja needs to play like an all-star. Brandon Clark needs to emerge as a true sixth man of the year contender leading, you know, what is arguably the bench unit in the league. And then Jaren Jackson Jr. really stepping up his offensive game. That's a lot of things to expect to happen. And that's why I think you may see progress in those areas. But I also agree with you that the 9th or 10th spot is likely. 30 to 35 wins is probably a good measure with progression. But the thing about it is that if that happens, guess what? We get another lottery pick in a draft that whose strength in years, the biggest strength that we've seen in a draft in years is wing potential, which the Grizzlies truly need. So as you've stated many times, Joe, a season where there really is no bad outcome. But Joe, obviously the start of the season leaves a lot of opportunity for content. You know, you've been very supportive of me here, which I cannot thank you enough for. Obviously, you know, over at Grizzly Bear Blues, we have plenty that we're working on, but you specifically, some things that you have coming up, you know, for, you know, towards the end of the year, but as the start of the NBA season begins.
Sure. Well, we have our season previews going on right now. Player previews are being written as we speak about all the different Grizzlies players. I'll do the official season preview for GBB myself on the day of the first game against San Antonio here in a week or so. You know, the biggest thing for us, Sean, and I know you know this, is our staff, right? Our staff is our strength. I'm very fortunate to have been running GBB for goodness, over 4 years now, even longer than that. I can't even keep track, maybe 5 years. And I know people kind of connect me with GBB, but as I tell folks all the time, I have a great staff of people, you being one of them for sure, that helps make the site work. You know, the fact that Memphis has this team to be excited about and cover, to have that opportunity to lead a blog that in our market has really grown by leaps and bounds in these last few years, it's so fun to see, and it's so great to have young talent on our blog, the Bryce Hayes's and the Molly Morrisons. We have so many different talented people. Liana Ritter's fantastic. We talked about Justin, Nate Chester, Parker Fleming, and Brandon Abraham, our associate editors. I don't want to leave anybody out. The Starting Five podcast, which has done a great job as part of our podcast network. There's just so much talent over at GBB, and it's really fun to be at the head of the ship and kind of steering it. You know, I had multiple people tell me today, because we were kind of talking about how coverage from some national market folks has waned a little bit in Memphis. You know, GBB has become a site that isn't just a fan blog. You know, people kind of count on us, and I don't mean that as incendiary. It's important to be a fan blog, and I think that's the heart of what we do. But people count on us for our content. You know, people come to us expecting good work, not just, you know, fan blog fandom pieces, but they want analysis, they want breakdowns, they want game coverage, they want media availability, and they look at us the same way that they would look at other sources of that type of stuff, like the Daily Memphian, the Commercial Appeal, and that means the world to me. That means a lot, and I can't do that without folks like you. So I'll be writing a lot, as I always do. GBB Live will be chugging along like it always does. But, you know, the strength of GBB, even though I'm fortunate to be out front, is all the folks that are alongside me, working with me. And then you're a big part of that too, Sean. So GBB in general, GrizzlyBearBlues.com, our podcast network, just stick with us, as a lot of folks have, and continue to spread the word about all the great stuff that we're doing over there. It means a lot. And I'm very grateful to still be doing this after all these years.
As I say almost every podcast that I do, the biggest reason why I enjoy writing and, you know, podcasting, thankful for the opportunities that you and folks like Mark King obviously have given me, is that it's just an opportunity for me to consistently have the ability to enjoy and interact with others who share the passions that I do, and talented folks as well. So I couldn't agree with you more. It's a great family to be a part of at GBB, and it's great to get to interact with you and others. You can follow Joe at Joe Mullinax. We will have him on frequently throughout the season. It's always a pleasure to get his insights.
I'm going to hold you to that.
Hey, you have a word.
That sounds like a weekly spot. You heard him. You heard him, Locked On Grizzlies fans. That sounds like a weekly spot to me, Sean. I like it. That sounds good. I'm in.
For Joe Mullinax, this is Sean Cohen. Just follow the show at Locked On Grizz, myself at Stats SAC. We will talk to you soon here on the Locked On Grizzlies podcast, and hope that you have a great evening.